This podcast contains recollections of true crime and paranormal events and may be unsuitable for some listeners. Listener discretion is advised.
For the month of October, we are doing a couple Halloween-themed episodes, and this week's episode is vampires. If you have not caught part one of vampires, I would highly recommend you go back and listen to part one. This is part two of vampires, so we hope you enjoy. Okay, welcome back everyone to another Hot Tea, Cold Cases, Frosty Hauntings, Folklore Stories, fairy tales, and more, etc. We are really widening our horizons.
We are very much so, very especially much. With these episodes.
Yes, we are. I'm Alexa.
And I'm Allie.
And if you have not listened to our part one, that aired on Wednesday. So welcome to part two. Part one, we learned a lot about the science behind vampirism and a lot about different cultures. So it was like super interesting. So go listen to that.
Yes. And on today's episode, we are going to learn about some history on your favorite vampires and some true crime and modern vampire information. So
yeah, perfect.
I will just dive right in then.
This episode's all about Allie.
So we talked about on the first episode of that, or I guess part one, whatever, that Alexa talked about the couple of the diseases that can be associated with vampires, and she alluded to me talking about rabies. So I'm going to talk about rabies right now.
Our favorite topic. We can't
exactly. wait. Exactly. So this is actually pretty interesting. So this is kind of like how the ideas of how to ward off vampires came about, and this is a blog posting on National Geographic. So I took that as like a moderately reliable source for this information.
Like a reliable source.
Yeah.
That's good.
So it came from National Geographic, and it was quoted a lot by this guy named Mark. And he is a National Geographic historian, and he has written a book titled Vampire Forensics.
Ooh.
Yes.
Sounds intriguing.
I know. So they listed six ways to stop a vampire, but I ignored one because I picked the top five that I feel is most common talked about.
Okay. All right.
So the first one, number one, is garlic.
Classic. We talked a little bit about garlic in my section in part one.
Exactly. So this has all of this information for how to ward off vampires has strong ties to rabies. And so Mark writes, in 1998, Spanish neurologist Dr. Juan Guzman Alonso made a correlation between reports of rabies outbreaks in around the Balkans.
The what?
Balkans?
Balkans? That sounds like I've heard that before.
Let's see. Balkans? Southeast Europe.
Okay.
Is where that's located.
Okay.
So, especially a devastating one in dogs, wolves, and other animals that plagued Hungary from 1721 to 1728, and the vampire epidemics that erupted shortly thereafter. Wolves and bats if rabid have the same snarling, slobbering look about them that folklore ascribed to vampires, as would a human suffering from the rabies. Mm-hmm. Various other symptoms of rabid men have a tendency to bite other people, and that almost guarantees transmission of the rabies virus because the virus is carried in saliva.
Can I give a little anecdote about rabies?
Okay.
Yeah, that was a weird way to start that. But okay, so yep. I think it was like a year ago or something like that, there was like a rabies scare in Greeley, which is close to where I live. I don't live in Greeley, but I live close. There was like a rabies scare. And one of the ladies I worked with, her son was one of the kids involved. So what had happened was her son and a bunch of other kids went over to a friend's house where this kid's grandma stayed, and she had caught like a baby raccoon.
Okay.
Put it in a cage, and then we're like letting the kids pet it, and like, oh my gosh, so cute, baby raccoon. All these little kids are like so excited, and they're petting this raccoon. And then that raccoon had rabies. So according to like doctors, they, first off, you have to get like the vaccine almost right away, and it is like $1,000 for this vaccine. Wow. And if you don't get the vaccine, it is like almost 100% chance that you are going to die from the rabies if you caught it.
Wow.
So it's like you don't really want to play with it, because if you catch it, it's like pretty much 100% chance you're going to die from it. So like, why would you mess with that? Just get the vaccine. But also, yeah, the vaccine's like $1,000. Uh-huh. But they said that it can literally be transmitted, like, say the animal has rabies and it's transmitted through like saliva, but if they're like licking themselves and you pet them and then you like rub your eyes or something like that, you can get it transmitted that way.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So it's like actually kind of a big deal. Like, it's not even just like a bite, like straight up do not even touch an animal that could possibly have rabies.
That's crazy.
So that's my little anecdote for you. Did not think I would ever have a story about rabies, but there it is. That's
my story. I'm glad that you had one. Thank you.
Now we are all enlightened.
Well, on to how rabies and garlic are connected.
Oh, yeah. That's where we were going.
It's fine. It's fine. Okay. So this is still the quote from Mark.
Okay.
So it says, rabies can even help explain the supposed aversion of vampires to garlic. Infected people would display a hypersensitive response to any pronounced olfactory stimulation, which would naturally include the pungent smell of garlic. So since garlic has such a very strong smell, mm-hmm, and they are very hypersensitive, mm-hmm, to smells, it would like make them run away, or I don't know what you do if you smell a really bad smell.
I mean, probably not want to be there anymore.
So probably not.
Okay.
So next is mirrors and sunlight, which you talked about in part one.
Yes.
So this is interesting. This is also a quote from Mark. Rabies may also harbor the roots of vampiric fear of mirrors. Strong odors or visual stimuli trigger spasms of the face and vocal muscles of those with rabies, and this in turn induces hoarse groans, bared teeth, and a bloody frothing at the mouth.
Oh.
Yeah.
Horrendous.
Yes. So next is the crucifix and holy water. Mm-hmm. And that very much stems from like the demonic or satanic types of vampires that you talked about. So yes, for obvious reasons, those would ward them off. The next is a stake through the heart. So So the stake of hawthorn or ash, this is how they killed vampires in Serbia. And so I actually have a little small story for this. So Arnold Powell,
Schwarzenegger?
I'm going to guess. No,
okay.
owl?
Nope, I only know a Schwarzenegger, so.
Okay, okay. Well, this is someone else.
Okay.
So he returned to his hometown of Medvegia,
mm-hmm.
near Kosovo.
Okay.
Kosovo.
Oh, yeah. Kosovo. That's the one, where, right?
We said it the same way. Kosovo.
Kosovo. That's the one where, like, the vampires are invisible and the twin brothers and the twin sisters that are born on a Saturday with their clothes inside out can see them.
That's the same place?
That's the same place.
Oh, my gosh.
So for you who are like, what are you talking about? Go listen to part one right now.
Listen to part one. Because this is really exciting that it ties in so well. Yeah. So this is close to it. So it's not there.
Okay.
But it's close to it. Okay. In 1727, and he was convinced that he had fallen prey to a vampire. So like your story says, they can like go after people.
Right. As vampires tend to do.
But the invisible ones, right?
Yes.
Okay. So he ultimately died from a fall. So it wasn't like even connected to a vampiric type mm-hmm. deal. He just like fell and he died.
Okay.
Like shortly after proclaiming that he had fallen prey to a vampire. And so the neighbors started complaining that Arnold was leaving his grave at night. And so villagers dug up his grave and put a stake through his heart because they believed that was the only way to kill him. And so that kind of is what sparked the notion of, like, driving a stake through the heart of a vampire.
Mm, okay.
Yes.
So what really, like, cracks me up, have you seen, I'm sure you have, but Hotel Transylvania?
Yes. Oh my gosh. I love Hotel Transylvania.
It is one of my favorite movies, but my, like, one of my all-time favorite lines from that movie is when the kid finds out that he's Dracula, and he's like, oh, so a stake through the heart would kill you? And he's all, well, yes, but who wouldn't that kill? And it
I love that part too, yeah.
Every single time, because I'm like, that's so true. Why have we never talked about that before?
I also love in that movie where when he's like, we don't go, blah, 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 blah.
I don't go, blah, blah, blah. Yes, I love that movie so much.
What a classic.
Anyway.
So the decapitation and burning, which you talked a lot about decapitation
mm-hmm.
for vampires. So this is another Mark quote. Chop off the head and burn the body seems the most universal way of stopping a vampire. So if you take the head off of a body, you don't have a vampire anymore. So it makes sense because if the corpse is re...
I guess.
Exactly, exactly. Let's see. Oh, and then he also talks about how that was also a very common way to kill witches.
Okay.
And they did that because that then they would have no physical way to come back and haunt them. Like, you know, like the phrase, like, no body, no crime.
Mm-hmm.
No body, no vampire.
Well, I mean, what's true is true.
Thank you. Okay, so those are just a little part to go with Alexa's to kind of close that whole part of the folklore out with reasons why they might have been thinking of ways to kill the vampires mm-hmm. and why it makes sense. Like you said, a stake through the heart would kill anyone.
Yes, it would. So would decapitation. So would burning. But, you know, it's fine. I also don't particularly like to go near people who have had a lot of garlic, but...
And if someone puts a mirror in front of my face after I just wake up in the morning, I might also snarl yes. and cower away.
It is
so.
The same reaction I get when I accidentally turn my front camera on.
Exactly.
We're all vampires in reality.
We all have a little bit of vampire in all of us.
There's a little bit of vamp in each and every one of us.
Gosh. Okay. Well... you cannot have a vampire podcast without addressing the elephant in the room, which is Vlad the Impaler.
Bum, bum, bum.
Vlad. So, most of my research came from livescience.com, but when I would look at other, like, different websites, it was basically the same information. They just had all of it on one page. Okay. So I don't know if they're the ones that wrote it or if other people wrote it and then they just kind of like pick and choose what they want. I don't know who the primary source was, but I got it from livescience.com.
Okay.
So everyone is familiar with Bram Stoker's Dracula.
Dracula. I drank a Dracula juice margarita for dinner.
Also,
two of them, in fact.
Did you ever read Dracula?
No, and I remember you talking about it because you were in a different English class than me in high school, and you were like, oh my gosh, this book, and so I was so excited for our Dracula unit, and did we get one? No.
Well, fun fact, it was not a Dracula unit.
Oh, okay.
It was a pick-your-own literature book.
Well, no wonder.
Naturally, I chose Dracula.
Okay. All right.
Other people were picking like The Great Gatsby and Huckleberry Finn and Great Expectations.
One fish, two fish, red fish, blue fish.
And here I am, and I'm like, you know, I'm gonna do Dracula.
I do.
But anyway, Dracula is easily one of the best books I've ever read. So if you need a good book to read, I highly, highly recommend Dracula. And it's not like one of those classic books where everyone's like, oh, you should read this classic book, it's really good. And then you like fall asleep reading it.
Yeah, and then it sucks.
Yeah, no, this one is actually so good. I still have my copy if you want to borrow
it.
Anyway.
It's about The Great Gatsby.
Huh?
Like, when we read The Great Gatsby, I didn't enjoy it. The story I enjoyed, but the book was awful, in my opinion.
Yeah, I liked The Great Gatsby, but also Dracula was like 10 times better.
Yeah, I could see that.
But anyway, so now Dracula is basically the face of like all vampires.
Yep.
Aside from like maybe Twilight, but we're not going to talk about that. We're going to talk about Dracula.
Real vampires.
Yes. So Dracula, contrary to popular belief, he is a completely made-up character. And so it is speculated that Bram Stoker based Dracula off of the real-life Vlad III, Prince of Wallachia,
okay,
a.k.a. Vlad the Impaler.
And are you going to explain why he was known as Vlad the Impaler?
Who do you think I am?
Okay.
What do you think this is, amateur hour?
Okay. I just had to make sure because I've actually always wondered that. It just never made sense to me.
Oh, well, it's about to.
Okay.
So, Vlad III was born in 1431.
Whoa.
In what is now Transylvania. And in case nobody knows where Transylvania is, it's the central region of modern-day Romania.
And if you haven't seen Hotel Transylvania, there's something wrong with you.
It's so good. Okay, so this part is going to be very history-based, and I tried to summarize as best I could, but it's hard to summarize history, so a lot of this is like word-for-word quoted from that Live Science
literally
website.
Like almost my whole section, so.
Okay. Okay, so follow along, and if you have questions, I will try to clarify.
Okay.
If my notes don't make sense.
Okay.
So in 1431, King Sigmund of Hungary inducted Vlad II, which is Vlad the Impaler's dad.
Okay.
That's his father.
Okay.
Into a knightly order that was called the Order of the Dragon.
Ooh.
And this Order of the Dragon was a religious secret group.
I love historical things like that.
Oh, good. It gets good.
Okay.
So Vlad II thus earned, due to this induction, a new name, which is Dracul. And this name came from the old Romanian word for dragon. So, Order of the Dragon, Dracul, and then the old Romanian word for dragon is Drac. And so the way that these names are passed down through the family would then make Vlad III, Vlad the Impaler, he would be called son of Dracul, which would be pronounced Dracula.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so in modern Romania, the word Drac refers to the devil. So Vlad III can also be called son of the devil.
Oh, okay.
Yes. Yeah. When you find out what he did, you'll be like, oh, yeah, okay, well, I get that.
I get it now. Okay, all right.
Yes. So the theory that Vlad III and Dracula were the same person was developed by historians Radu Florescu and Raymond T. McNally in their book In Search of Dracula, which I want to read. And In Search of Dracula was written in 1972. However, most historians do not believe that Vlad III, Vlad the Impaler, and Dracula are the same person.
So when before they kind of came to the conclusion that they were probably the same person, did people think that Dracula was a real person?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, I think some people kind of like put two and two together, but they like really took it to heart and like wrote a whole book on it. But I'm pretty sure there are still some people out there that think Dracula was like a real person, because I'll get into it too, because people talk about Dracula's castle, and so people think that it's kind of like a real thing. Not like that he was like a real vampire that could turn into bats and blah blah blah,
right.
But like that blah 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 blah
blah blah, blah
that
blah.
He was but that he was a real person, if that makes sense.
The castle is real though, isn't it? There is an actual castle.
I'll get to it.
Oh, okay.
Don't
sorry.
You
I'm
worry.
I'm jumping the gun. I'm so sorry.
I know. I did too. Don't you worry. It's exciting. Okay. So, I named him pre-Vlad, which is baby Vlad, before he becomes Vlad the Impaler.
Okay. All right. Pre-Vlad.
So, I'm going to sum up the background of pre-Vlad the Impaler as best I can. And this did not make a whole lot of sense to me because I'm very unfamiliar with like European history.
Yeah.
And so I tried my best.
Okay.
So basically, Vlad II, which is Vlad the Impaler's dad, went to a meeting in 1442 with Ottoman Sultan Murad II.
Okay.
And Vlad, Dad Vlad, brought his
Dad
two
Vlad.
Sons.
Okay.
Brought his two sons, Vlad III and Radu, with him. So the meeting ended up being a trap, which took both Vlads, Vlad Dad, baby Vlad, and Radu hostage.
Okay. Wow. That escalated quickly.
Yes. So, Dad Vlad II was offered a release if he allowed his sons to remain prisoners.
What?
So, like every good father, Vlad Dad agrees to leave his sons.
Sure. Sure.
Yeah.
Takes a deal. Why not?
But this might sound like a bad deal. However, Vlad III and Radu were tutored in science, philosophy, arts, horse riding, and combat.
What was the point of the hostages then?
Because they wanted to have control over Vlad II's political moves with like war and stuff.
Oh, okay.
But I did see that like very recently, I think in like 2018 or something, that they found like the holding cells where they might have kept Vlad, baby Vlad,
as
prisoner.
So cool.
Yeah. So I'm not sure like what their living situation was like, but he was tutored in different aspects. I don't know like if it was a bad situation, but like they were like, we'll still teach you, or if it was a decent living situation. I'm not sure.
Okay.
Yeah. So this next part I did not fully understand, but basically it was found out that the dad Vlad was working with Ottoman, which is the guy that took his sons as prisoners.
Right.
And that Vlad's people found that out, and then they were really upset about it because Ottoman was the enemy. So it was basically like Ottoman and then Vlad, they were like fighting on the opposite sides of the war. And then when Ottoman took his kids, then Vlad started like secretly doing the things that Ottoman wanted, but on this other side.
I think
that's what was going on.
Like it maybe turned him into a double agent.
Yes.
But like
yeah.
He didn't want to be a double agent.
Perhaps. I think so, yeah.
Okay.
So Vlad was in a swamp, and apparently he was killed, and his half son, Mercia, I don't know how you say his name, was also killed because they found out that the dad Vlad was working with Ottoman.
So dad Vlad was killed.
Dad Vlad was killed.
Okay.
Yes. So once dad Vlad was killed, this prompted Vlad the Third to fight for his father's seat as the new ruler of Wallachia.
Okay.
I think it's how you say it. I'm not sure. So he won the seat. However, shortly after he took charge, he was dethroned by Vladislava the Second.
What? These names are...
Yes.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, so I think he was, like, a cousin or something. I don't know. He was something. So Vlad the Third's whereabouts between 1448 and 1456 are unknown. However, in this time, he did switch sides from supporting the Ottoman, like... your chair, a furniture piece, supporting him to supporting King Ladislaus.
Yep. Sounds good.
Of Hungary. So basically it was like Ottoman versus Hungary.
Okay.
And so Vlad was with Ottoman because he was like prisoner there and he was like groomed into it. And then when he disappeared for that period of time, he then supported Hungary.
Okay.
So due to this cutting of ties, the peace that was previously kept between the Wallachias and the Ottomans was eliminated. So now they're enemies.
Okay.
I think I am
with you.
I'm actually really proud of how I'm explaining this. I hope that it's accurate.
I hope so too. But it makes sense.
If it's not accurate, I apologize.
But
no one's
a good
taking
story.
A test after this.
Nah, it's a good story.
Thank you. So in 1453, Constantinople fell to the Ottomans. And so this was a really, really, really big deal because then it put the Ottomans at the forefront to possibly invade all of Europe.
Whoa.
Yeah, so this put them in a, like, really strong political place in the war. So Vlad III was then put in charge to defend Wallachia, I hope I'm saying that right, from being invaded. So his lands were in ruin and many boyars, which I looked up because I had no idea what a boyar was. A member of the old aristocracy in Russia, next in rank to a prince.
Okay.
So they were like right under Vlad,
okay.
I'm guessing. They were feuding in his lands. And so Vlad then invited hundreds of these feuding boyars to his castle for a banquet. The boyars were then impaled upon arrival when he and his other guests then started to stab their still twitching bodies that were impaled by these like huge sticks.
Is this the impaler part?
Yes.
Okay.
So obviously, if you're not familiar what being impaled is, it's like a very long stick. It can or cannot be sharp. And it's generally rooted in the ground. And the idea behind it is it goes in through an orifice on the like bottom end of a person. So like your butt hole.
Okay.
And then it goes through the person either out through their mouth or like the back of the neck.
So I guess I would have thought that in being impaled was the long object rooted in the ground, but anywhere could have impaled you anywhere.
I think that the like war process, like that was the ideal placement. Okay. Like that's like what they aimed for.
Okay. That's yeah. Disturbing.
Yep. So Vlad wrote to a military ally in 1462, "I have killed peasants, men and women, old and young, who lived at Oblukitaza."
Okay. So many good words.
And so many. And Novoselo, where the Danube flows into the sea, we killed 23,884 Turks without counting those whom we burned in homes or the Turks whose heads were cut by our soldiers. Thus, Your Highness, you must know that I have broken the peace.
Okay.
So 23,000 plus people they killed during this war. And just to kind of like put it in perspective, you know, like when we're talking about that amount of people, Hungary is like maybe the size of Texas.
Yeah.
If that.
Yeah.
Like that is a lot of people for that small amount of space.
Yeah. That's like not a very big population for a lot of people who died.
Yes. So there are many speculations on the horrible things that Vlad has done. Some can be verified and others cannot. A few of the stories that are left for conjecture are, one, it's said that Vlad dined among a forest of warriors writhing on impaled poles.
What?
Like he just had a dinner there surrounded all by like all of these people dying.
Oh my gosh.
Mm-hmm. And second, it is also said that Vlad would dip his bread in the blood of his victims.
Ugh.
Yep. And this is said in the book that I mentioned earlier, In Search of Dracula.
Mm-hmm.
And in this book, they cite a 15th century German poem that describes Vlad as a blood drinker. However, some historians argue that this interpretation of the poem is incorrect and that it actually says that Vlad liked to wash his hands in the blood of his victims before he ate dinner. But
I mean, either
to me,
way, gross, but
yeah, I was going to say, to me, it seems like either way, Vlad is getting blood of his victims in his mouth somewhere or another.
Somehow.
So we do know that Vlad is estimated to have killed nearly 80,000 people.
Whoa.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
But about 20,000 of these people were impaled and put on display outside the city of, let's see, I wrote it down so I would know how to say it, Targoviste? Targoviste?
So, okay, putting people, like, on a stick on display, as disturbing as it is, I'm pretty sure was decently common practice back then.
I'll read it to you. It was like my next sentence.
Oh, okay.
So putting them on display outside the city was a warning sign to the Ottomans that were planning to evade. And so upon seeing this gruesome sight of 20,000 people impaled, they retreated back to Constantinople.
Yeah.
And like impaling enemies like this was a good way to scare armies, and it was a military tactic.
Yeah.
Which is gross.
Well, yes. Very
much so. So ultimately, Vlad was killed and beheaded by the Ottomans, and his head was delivered to Mehmed II in Constantinople.
Okay.
As a trophy to be displayed above the city's gates. So they just took Vlad's head and put it up at the front of the city gates.
Wow.
Yep. So now I'm going to talk about the castles that you were talking about. Because this has a large role in why, like, obviously people think like Vlad the Impaler is the same as Dracula. So then they think about like Dracula's castle. They think that one is where Dracula lived and two is where Vlad the Impaler lived, mm-hmm. because they kind of associate them as the same person. Mm-hmm. And so this castle is Braun Castle. Okay. And I got this information from the Braun Castle website. And this is like an official quote. The website is literally brauncastle.com.
Okay, good to know. Easy.
So this is an official quote from them, which is, "We invite you to experience the history, the myth, the intrigue, and the magic of this wonderful place and its queen. We hope that you will carry the spirit that makes us love Braun Castle with you, always. By some guy named Dominic Habsburg."
Thanks, Dominic.
Thanks, Dom.
Thanks,
appreciate
Dom.
You. So I just wanted to paint this picture of it being very, like, nice and not scary.
Yeah. But, I mean, it sounds... I would love to go there, to be honest with you.
Hold on, though.
Oh. Okay.
So, Braun Castle is associated with Bram Stoker's Dracula because it is the only castle in Transylvania that fits the description of Dracula's castle in the book. And,
okay.
Like I said earlier, it's known throughout the world as Dracula's castle. So Bram Stoker never visited Romania, and he used a description of Braun Castle as the backbone of his description of Dracula's castle.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So this is another quote from the website. "In the villages near Braun, there is a belief in the existence of evil spirits called ghosts," or you said the word. What's your vampire word?
The Strigoi?
Yes!
Woo woo! I know. You were like, "or," and I was like, "or."
Or.
Demons?
We did have a pop quiz and you passed.
Yes.
The Strigoi.
Mine is definitely until, spelled like Strigoi.
It looks like Strigoi.
Mine was like STRI.
This is STREGOI. But it's basically the same thing.
Yeah, I guess
like it sounds the same.
Yeah, it's probably the same, just different spellings.
Yeah. But anyway, until half a century ago, it was believed... Oh, yeah. Okay, so it was believed that there existed certain living people, and then here it is. It's spelled the same way, Strigoi.
Okay, yep.
Uh-huh. Who were leading a normal life during the day, but at night, during their sleep, their souls left their bodies, haunted, tormented people, blah, blah, blah. We already talked about this.
Yep.
If
you are confused, go listen to part one.
Yes. And so this is a quote from... Stoker's book. "The undead, ghosts, vampires suffer from the curse of immortality. They pass from one period to another, multiplying their victims, augmenting the evil in the world." Mm. And obviously Dracula derives from these local myths. Like, he fits very well into this folklore that you talked about.
Yes.
But the website wants to make sure that you know that the Braun Castle is real and that Dracula's castle is fake, and the two are not the same. And if you want to look it up on the website, they have a bunch of pictures, and it actually looks nice and beautiful and like a honeymoon vacation destination as opposed to like a vampire's like
dark,
murdery castle.
Creepy, yeah, murderous, yeah.
Exactly. So, we kind of debunked that Dracula's castle is not real, but it was based off of Braun Castle. And his description of the castle is beautiful. Like, I can still picture it in my head in that book. So, you guys have to read it. You have to read Dracula.
Okay.
But some people also think that that Dracula's castle is Vlad the Impaler's castle, if they think they're the same person. However, Vlad's castle is actually Targovaste, I think is how you say it, castle. And so this castle is actually claimed to be extremely haunted.
Ooh.
due to the thousands of people that were killed there, obviously, from being impaled.
Ooh, that's interesting.
Very. And people have heard voices and footsteps, and wouldn't you know it, ghost adventures visited here.
Oh, we love that. Isn't it funny that literally last episode I was all, I've never seen ghost adventures, or and I'm all, ghost adventures.
You've come to the dark side. We love ghost adventures.
I like look forward to watching it when I come home from work.
I know, it's so good.
Because it's like still light outside, so I'm good watching it then. Can't watch it when it's dark out still, but
that's okay.
So good.
Well, they did visit this one. They did visit this castle. And per usual, I watched the full episode as part of my research.
Yep, love it.
And Zach did not stay at the castle, are we surprised? He instead went to some forest and he got possessed. Again, are we surprised? It's Zach.
Sometimes, okay, I have to admit, for all those ghost adventure like watchers out there, it like really grinds my gears sometimes when something really bad happens and then he's like, Aaron, go in there.
That's the joke. We all feel bad for Aaron.
I'm like, Zach, you go in there.
Zach will not go in there, are you?
No. And you know how, and then like sometimes he's like, everyone has their limits and I'm scared. And I'm just going to be like, you know what? You don't care when anyone else is scared, so go.
Yeah, Aaron's like, dude, I don't want to do that. No, Aaron, you're going to do it anyway. Yeah. But anyway. So, Aaron, and I think it was Nick, they stayed overnight in the castle, and they heard footsteps, they got voices on their spirit box, they were feeling like cold pockets in the room as the voices were coming through the box, so they did actually catch a decent amount of, like, paranormal activity while they were there.
Yeah.
And, fun fact, them staying at this castle was their Halloween special. Was the Ghost Adventures Halloween special.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So that pretty much closes my information on Vlad and Dracula.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any final questions for me, or does that all sound pretty good?
That sounds good.
Okay, cool.
Interesting. I did not know that much about that.
Ah, perfect. So now we're going to fast forward many, 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 many years forward.
Okay.
And we are going to talk about modern vampire culture.
Yes. I'm actually so excited for this.
This was honestly like the most interesting thing to read. So get ready because it's a lot. It's very interesting.
Okay.
Also, I feel like most of my research came from, like, pretty credible areas.
Yeah.
So, the following information came from Grindel College under subcultures and sociology subcategory vampires.
Nice. Okay.
Yes. So they started with a quote that I thought was too good to pass up, so I'm gonna give it a whirl.
Okay.
They drink blood. They sleep all day in coffins. They say they're real vampires, and they might just be living next door to you. Tyra Banks.
What?
Tyra Banks said that.
Oh. The whole time I was like, yeah. Yeah. And then Tyra Banks. I was like, yep. Okay, you lost me there.
Yep. So, probably almost all of this information is like quoted, or I very badly summarized it, but it was, since this is like an active subculture, I wanted to try my hardest not to offend anyone if they are part of this vampire subculture.
Okay.
So I tried to take a lot of the information that they said on here. But Tyra in this quote is referring to the vampire subculture, or real vampires, which consists of individuals that identify as non-human vampires, and they feed on the energy of non-vampires through either the drinking of blood or other psychic means, and they often believe that they were born as vampires and not humans.
So I guess I'm a little bit confused as to where Tyra Banks fits into all of this.
I think that she was, like, talking about this on, like, one of her, like, many TV shows that she has.
Okay. So she herself was not in vampire culture.
No.
And she herself was not studying vampire culture.
Unless she did, like, an episode on it or something. You know what I mean? Okay.
Yeah. That is just really throwing me for a loop. I'm like, Tyra, you don't really belong here. I'm confused.
It's fine. You can just leave her. Leave her there.
Okay, and we'll just keep on going then.
Okay. Okay, so these vampires believe that they must feed on the energy of other people in order to, this is a quote, sustain their physical, mental, and spiritual health.
Okay.
So there are two types of vampires, which I will get into. So one of the vampire types is the sanguinarian?
Sure.
Or sang vampires, and they ingest small amounts of blood, human or otherwise, in order to obtain the energy that they believe is held within the blood.
Okay.
And so the blood is obtained through a willing donor, and the act of feeding on a donor is known as bloodletting. And most sang vampires only require a few drops of blood. However, some drink as much as a full glass.
Oh, what?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a bot.
I know. And I'll kind of get a little bit more into that, the blood drinking process in a little bit. But okay. The second type of vampires are the psychic vampires, or psi. So the psychic vampires do not believe that it is necessary for them to consume blood in order to obtain the energy they need to survive. Psychic vampires drain the bodily energy of others by psychic means. And so means in which that they can obtain this bodily energy are through the two most common ways, which are one, touch, where a psychic vampire can take the energy they need by touching a person, which is called proximity feeding.
Okay. How interesting.
And yes. And proximity feeding is like, as it sounds, feeding off the proximity of those in their area. Right. So like anyone who's close to them that they can feed off of their energy.
How weird to think about, like, if you met someone and then they, like, reached out to shake your hand and you thought it was just, like, a casual greeting, but they're, like, feeding off of your energy.
And, like, what if that kind of has to do, like, you know, like, if you go out in, like, big crowds of people and, like, you'll feel kind of, like, emotionally drained and, like, you need to go home and relax.
Yeah.
What if someone is, like, feeding off your energy?
Yeah, that's weird. Ooh, really weird to think about, but
yeah,
it could be.
Yeah. So the energy that is taken during the feeding is either pranic or emotional. So pranic energy is named after the word prana, which is aura. And you kind of talked about that.
Yeah, yep.
Meaning life force. And so this is just the energy that people give off by being alive. So,
okay.
Yes. Those are just the two main types of vampires, but there are also other, like, sub groups and types of vampires.
Sure.
Also, this was funny. They said that, like, well, first, vampires, like, you might not know someone is a vampire because it's a very, like, underground kind of thing. Like, hardly anyone that is part of this vampire culture outwardly, like, comes out and tells you that.
Right.
And so they said that many real vampires have shared interest in music such as goth rock, goth metal, and dark wave music. Like, that's a similarity that they all share, which I thought was interesting.
Okay.
Or, like, most of them share. And so members of the... Some members, obviously... Those that want to kind of keep their identity a secret wouldn't do this, but those that are a little bit more, I guess, like, vocal about them will seek out fangsmiths, which are people who create artificial fangs.
Oh, there's people that do that?
Uh-huh.
That's an occupation.
Fangsmiths. Fangsmiths.
Okay. To each their own.
Yep. So, the Atlanta Vampire Alliance, or AVA, conducted a research study known as the Vampirism and Energy Work Research Study, or VIEWERS, consisting of two surveys of almost 1,000 total questions, and these surveys received over 1,450 responses. And so the research study attempted to identify commonalities amongst the vampire community, and the AVA claims it is the largest and most in-depth research study ever conducted on the real vampire community or subculture.
Wow.
Yeah. So the VIEWERS provides a look at the similarities amongst the individuals who responded to the survey in terms of their psychological conditions before and after they were awakened. So, this was actually really interesting. Many real vampires have been diagnosed with physical conditions such as migraines, asthma, and anemia, and mental conditions such as depression, panic attacks, ADD, ADHD, and bipolar disorder.
Okay.
And although real vampires are almost always pale and have some sort of sensitivity to sunlight, they believe that being pale or feeling drained of energy does not necessarily mean that someone is a vampire. Rather, they understand that it may be a sign of health deficiencies.
All right.
So basically what they're saying is, like, these real vampires aren't like, oh, I'm a vampire because I'm pale. Like, they're aware that their paleness could be health deficiencies, not them being a vampire, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So, like I said earlier, it's often difficult to get members of the vampire community to agree to be interviewed or recorded due to their fear of coworkers or neighbors learning about their hidden identities.
Mm-hmm.
So there are many members of the vampire subculture all over the world. But there are more dense populations of real vampires in Manhattan, New Orleans, and London.
I wonder why.
I don't know, but isn't that interesting?
So, like, I knew New Orleans. There's like a lot of folklore that comes out of New Orleans. But London and Manhattan, like,
Yeah.
I don't understand where those really come from.
I don't either, but apparently there are dense populations of real vampires there.
Very interesting.
This is also interesting. So it says that these cities are host to vampire gatherings such as Father Sebastian's Endless Night Vampire Ball.
Sure, that sounds like a blast and a half.
It does, actually. I saw pictures of it online and it looked quite fun.
My gosh.
Most of the attendees did look a little pale, though, so.
Sure. I mean, well, what can you expect?
So I also read a Guardian article that was titled Interview with a Real Life Vampire: Why Drinking Blood Isn't Like in Hollywood. And it is an interview with a real life vampire from August 2015.
Okay.
And so this article did talk a little bit more about the like bloodletting that I talked about earlier.
Right.
So it said, first, modern vampires do not just bite random people in the neck to get their blood. They will make inch-long incisions with a scalpel on a fleshy part of the body that does not scar. So
Okay.
some vampires may suck it up directly from the source, ick. But often, medically trained personnel will perform the procedure that includes paperwork where the donor provides consent and health cert like certificates proving that they don't have any bloodborne illnesses or diseases, which is good. Like, keep our vampires healthy and safe, please. Don't just, if you are a vampire, please don't just suck random people's blood. Make sure that
Yeah.
you do this from like a
Do
professional and
the background research.
do the background work.
Yeah.
So the vampire that was interviewed, he went by Murdicus, I think is how you say it.
Okay.
Murdicus.
Do they have like separate vampire names?
Some of them do,
Okay.
yes.
Okay.
Some have separate names, but he said that he uses Murdicus as his vampire name and his regular. That's what he just goes by.
Okay.
Murdicus, yeah. So these were just like a couple of quotes that I pulled throughout the article. I didn't pull any of their context. I just wanted to say them. So the first is, we do not identify with fictional characters, supernatural powers, or immortality, nor do we have any difficulty distinguishing between fantasy and reality. So he like wants to make it clear that because they are part of the vampire subculture doesn't mean like they are crazy or delusional or anything like that.
Right.
It's like this lifestyle that
They
they
don't,
live.
yeah, they don't want to be associated with the modern vampire.
Yeah, exactly. So he says, we are often among the more intelligent, influential, and creative of the general population. Granted,
Oh.
we may be more alluringly interesting or dimensionally complex than your typical cubicle coworker or next door neighbor, but we're trying to get by in this life just like everyone else. And when I read this quote, I thought of, you know, all those like memes of Jennifer Lawrence where she's like, I'm just a regular person. I'm like a regular
Yeah,
person. I'm just a regular person. That's like what I thought of. He's like, we're just getting by in life like everyone else. You know, like we're not special. We're just trying
that's
to get
kind of
by.
like one of those things where they're like, we may be more interesting than everyone else, we may live better lives than everyone else, but we're just normal people.
Yep,
I'm normal.
exactly.
What?
I literally thought of Jennifer Lawrence when I read that. Then this is like his final quote is, I'm more concerned about family life, the economy, finding a steady donor, and hoping the media doesn't attribute the latest murder to non-existent vampire cults than I am worried about seeking social justice and acceptance for my identity. All we ask for is an open mind, tolerance, and the right to privately live our lives.
Well, okay.
Yeah.
Reasonable.
So that pretty much sums up my research on modern vampires.
Okay. Interesting.
Yes.
Very interesting.
And
very much not what you would expect.
No, not at all. Not at all. And I know that Murdicus said that he didn't want the media to attribute the latest murder to non-existent vampire cults. However, I am going to talk about a murderous vampire cult.
And I'm so excited.
So, this vampire cult, or the vampire clan, features Rod Farrell.
Okay.
Does that name ring a bell to you at all?
No. Is it supposed to?
No, it's okay. It's just like a pretty famous case.
Oh, okay. No. Then no.
Okay. Okay, cool. So I did want to make a disclaimer before I start talking about this case. So this is a combination of vampirism and cult behavior, and it is not typical for modern vampires to engage in this behavior. As demonstrated from the segment that I talked about just before this one, like, this vampire culture is not a dangerous or, like, threatening culture. This crime case is because of the cult behavior, not solely, like, the vampirism aspect, right. If that makes sense.
Yes.
So, I just wanted to clarify that like modern vampires and like the vampire subculture is not this guy.
Yes, that makes sense.
Okay. So first and foremost, where did I get this information from? I think I got most of this from, you know, that TV channel Oxygen.
Yes.
Okay, so they did a documentary on him, and then they had, like, this full website page of all of the information, and that's where I got most of this information.
Okay.
Cite my sources.
Yeah, covering all of our bases.
All of our bases. So, Rod's mother, Rod is the perpetrator, the main perpetrator in this case. So we're going to kind of look at his background and then we're going to talk about the crime.
Okay.
So Rod's mother, Sandra Gibson, admits to dabbling in vampirism prior to her son getting involved in vampirism.
Okay.
So she was also an exotic dancer and sex worker to support herself and her son.
Okay.
So they had like a really unstable living situation and they lived off and on either by themselves with other men or with Sandra's parents. And Rod made a court statement that his grandfather raped him as a child.
Oh my gosh.
But there were never any, like, formal charges against the grandfather or anything. He just did say that formally.
Oh, my goodness.
Yep. Yeah. So, started off, his childhood was really, really hard. Not trying to minimize what he did or anything.
Exactly.
But
given an excuse.
Yes, exactly.
Right.
He did have a pretty difficult childhood. So, fast forward to Rod being a teenager. He's into a lot of, like, normal teenage stuff. So, he played games like Dungeons and Dragons, which names will not be named. And I'm crossing my fingers that this guy does not listen to the podcast or this is going to be really embarrassing for him. But I knew this guy that in college, this is in college, like my senior year.
So this is this someone I know?
Maybe.
What? Maybe. Did we go to school with them?
No, this is me in college. This is me in college.
Then how do I maybe know them?
Like, I might have told you about him. I don't know.
Oh, but I don't, like, know them.
No. Okay. No. Also, me in college. So, I was a junior, and he was a senior in college. Yes. And he would play Dungeons and Dragons, like, the entire day of Sunday. Like, we could not hang out because he would be like, oh, I have D&D at 10. And I'd be like, okay, well, can we, like, do dinner or something? And he'd be like, no, it normally goes until, like, 10 at night, too. So, they would, like, literally play for, like, hours.
Were you, like, kind of dating this guy?
Not really. Like, literally, we were talking for, like, maybe a week.
Why do I feel like you tell me about every single guy that you've, like, dated, but I have no idea who this is?
Probably because it lasted a week and he was a freaking weirdo.
Okay.
So sorry if he's listening to this. I feel so terrible.
I mean,
anyway,
the odds of that are not high, but you can still apologize.
Okay. So anyway, I knew what Dungeons and Dragons was. Like, I knew it was, like, some sort of board game, but I had, like, no idea what it was, right? And at this point, like, we're just friends. Like, you know, it's, like, kind of, like, exploring the possibility, like, maybe there's, like, something a little more. Mm-hmm. I don't know. And so I think he was trying to impress me. And he was trying to explain this, like, Dungeons and Dragons thing to me. And he's like, yeah, so I play Dungeons and Dragons and I'm, like, basically a god.
Okay.
So that turned me off because that was really uncomfortable. And he did a couple other things that were really weird. And I was just like, okay, no. But anyway.
So it's not. Okay. Disclaimer. If you play Dungeons and Dragons, that does not mean you are a weirdo. This person did other weird things.
If you start off by trying to impress a girl, telling her you're basically a god, and she has no idea what the heck Dungeons and Dragons are, she might think you're a little weird. But I found out.
Yeah, but if she's into Dungeons and Dragons,
yeah, exactly,
then I'll go for it.
But then I found out after watching Riverdale when they did, like, the gargoyles, yes, and the, mm-hmm, what were the other people?
I can't remember.
G&G, what was it?
I'm gonna look it up. It was Riverdale G and G. Griffins!
Griffins! Okay, yeah, the Griffin King, duh.
Gargoyle King. It's the Gargoyle.
Gargoyle King and the Griffin.
I don't know.
Anyway, okay. And then how they talk about how there's, like, a game master and they basically, like, control the whole game and they, like, tell people what happens.
Yes.
That's what he meant when he was like, oh, I'm basically a god. And I was like, okay, that makes sense now. I can understand,
yeah,
why he would have said that.
Once you understand what they're talking about, you're like, oh, cool.
Yeah.
But you're like, okay.
But does before.
What?
Yeah, I know. I was like, is that like a flex or something?
Yeah.
But anyway, I just wanted to throw that little story in there.
Thank you.
It's still, it's interesting. But anyway, so they were playing games like Dungeons and Dragons and Vampire the Masquerade, which apparently is like a video game. I've not ever heard of that before.
I haven't heard of it either.
Okay. They also were, he and his friends were, he was being like a moody teen, which is pretty normal.
Yep.
And I feel like if you're a moody teen, you're kind of into like some dark stuff, you know, like wearing all black and listening to gothic and like scary kind of music. Like,
right.
I think that that's normal teenage stuff. Until they started to drink each other's blood is when we start to take a turn out of, like, that normal angsty teenager into this vampiric type.
So from normal stuff. Teenage angst to not normal vampire.
Correct.
Culture. Okay.
Correct. So they kind of have this friend group going on right now, and it's a friend group of a bunch of like misfit teens. So an older boy involved in this group named Stephen Jaden Murphy. Stephen.
Is it PH?
Yes.
I think that one's Stephen, isn't it?
I thought so.
I'll just go with Stephen. I think that's fine.
Stephen. Okay. Jaden Murphy said that he crossed Rod over as a vampire in a ritual that involves drinking blood. Meanwhile, Rod's mother, Sandra, sent lurid letters to Steven's 14-year-old brother. So Steven's the one that crossed Rod over.
Okay.
Rod's mom is sending love letters to Steven's little brother.
What the?
Saying that she would be his bride for eternity as part of the vampire family.
What?
And I found a quote of one of the letters that she wrote. So I will read it to you, and it is gross. Like, this mom is writing this letter to a 14-year-old.
Okay.
Younger than her son, I will note.
Ugh.
So it says, I longed to be near you for your embrace. Yes, to be a vampire, a part of the family, immortal and truly yours forever. I only hope that one day you will once again return to Murray. He moved away and they moved and it was like a whole thing. You will then come for me and cross me over and I will be your bride for eternity and you my sire.
What?
Yeah, it's gross.
What?
Yeah.
Some people are so odd.
Like the mom.
Yeah.
To a 14-year-old.
Yeah.
Saying that she's going to be his bride forever.
That's disgusting.
Messed up. Yeah. Messed up. So after this, Rod started telling people that he was a 500-year-old vampire named Visago. And this name came from the name of a demon in occult literature.
Okay.
Visago was third in command of the spirits of Satan's army of rebel angels.
Okay.
And once he started proclaiming that he was this vampire, he then started recruiting followers into his vampire cult.
So, first off, can they just decide, like, they become a vampire and now all of a sudden he's a 500-year-old vampire? Like, that's super, like, role-play-y, right? That's not, like...
That's why I'm sure that Murdicus was saying, like, don't attribute these killings to, like, a weird vampire cult, because this kid obviously wouldn't really fall into, like, the real vampire modern-day cult. Or cult, oh my god.
Modern-day culture.
Modern-day culture,
yeah,
yes.
Yeah, I got you.
he's, like, got some weird stuff going on.
Yeah, sounds like it.
Yeah. So he's recruiting new followers for his vampire cult. And he would pretty much target mainly girls and some guys that were in abusive or unsteady households. So he's kind of like preying on the vulnerable teens.
Right.
And because those, I mean, I don't know if you're like super familiar with cults, but the way that cults become successful is they prey on vulnerable people or people looking for someone to look up to or believe in. And so
like offer that's, them a better life and
something to believe in.
Yeah, something to believe in. Yeah.
And so that's kind of what he was doing, was he was kind of picking up these misfit teens that were looking for that.
And how old is he at this point?
I believe he is 16 or...
Okay.
15 or 16.
So still very young.
Yes. Okay. Yeah.
All right.
So Rod's behavior started to become increasingly violent. And in October 1996, he allegedly broke in to an animal shelter and violently killed two puppies.
Oh, no.
Just two. No. Just to do it. Yeah. Disgusting.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So Rod and his cult, it's late.
Yeah, it's like 2 a.m. right now.
It is 2 a.m. So Rod and his cult and the cult members that he was with this night was Charity, Kesey, Scott Anderson, and Dana Cooper. And so the four of these people went and picked up Heather Wendorf.
Okay.
And Rod wanted to run away with Heather because she had told him that her parents were abusive and that she wanted to run away. And so they wanted to run away to New Orleans because of, like, the vampire culture that is there. And so in a cemetery on Monday, November 25th, 1996, Heather was crossed over and became a vampire by drinking Rod's blood. Rod then says that he took LSD and a couple of other drugs.
Okay.
And went to Heather's home to steal her family's car to run away to New Orleans.
On LSD? What was the point of the LSD?
I don't know. They're angsty teens.
That is, like, real angst, though.
They're vampires sucking each other's blood.
Okay.
LSD doesn't seem that far off at this point.
That's true. That's true.
So Heather told Rod that she didn't want him to mess with her parents and told him to leave them alone, that she just wanted to get away, run away, and, like, not bother or talk to them. So, Rod and Scott, the two guys in the cult, Rod was armed with a crowbar, and they entered the Wendorf's home, and they found Richard Wendorf sleeping on the couch, which was Heather's dad.
Oh, no. Okay.
So, Rod hit him repeatedly on the head with the crowbar until he killed him.
Oh my gosh.
Yep. So then Rod was confronted by Naomi Queen, who was the wife of Richard.
Okay.
And she threw a cup of, like, scalding drink on him when she walked in and she saw that this whole thing was going on. And then Rod attacked her, striking her so hard in the head with a crowbar that it severed her brain stem and it killed her instantly.
Oh, like, that's my how gosh. Hard he hit her.
Yeah. Yeah. So then the bodies of Richard and Naomi were given ritualistic burns. And then the boys searched the house for valuables. They stole a credit card, jewelry, and then eventually the family's car. So after they commit these brutal murders, the cult left the scene of the crime and they started heading for New Orleans. So Heather's older sister, Jennifer, found her parents' bodies when she returned home from work that night.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So Heather claimed that she didn't know that her parents had been killed until after she left town. But I personally find this really hard to believe, that the two boys didn't say anything about committing these, right, like, brutal murders to each other.
They kind of seem very like, look what I did. I need anyone to know what I did, kind of a thing.
Yeah, seriously, like, to just, like, not say a word about it is bizarre.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. So then, on November 27th, 1996, arrest warrants were issued for all five of the teens. So, the entire cult that's in the car right now.
Okay.
So, 4 days on the run, the police caught the group on November 28th. So at first that was confusing me because it said the 27th is when the warrants were issued. And then 4 days later, the cops found them on November 28th. And I was like, that's only one day. But that's 4 days from when they left the scene of the crime.
Oh, okay.
So yeah. After 1 day of having a warrant issued, the cops got them.
Okay.
The next day. So the teens were tracked to Baton Rouge, Louisiana. So they were pretty close to New Orleans. Mm-hmm. After Charity, one of the cult members, called her mom. So they were able to track them because Charity had made a phone call back to her mom.
Okay.
So after being caught, Rod extremely played up the role of being a vampire.
Oh my gosh. And
yeah. And so the murders and stuff, that all happened in Florida. And so in an interview with the Orlando Sentinel, he claimed that he was being framed by a rival group of vampires.
Oh my gosh.
He had multiple personalities that he was trying to ditch being a vampire. I don't even know what that means. Yep. So on May 30th, 1996, so this is in between Rod being arrested and then his trial. His mom, oh wait, no, this was before the murders had happened.
Okay. Wait, May 1996, but the murders happened in November.
Yeah. So May 1996, Rod's mother came home to find that Rod had carved an upside down cross into his chest with a razor.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Yeah. So this is when we jump in the future. So from when he got arrested to when his trial started, it took like 2 years. So Rod pled guilty to 2 counts of murder in the first degree at the start of his trial on February 5th, 1998. Mm-hmm. Scott Anderson pled guilty in April 1998 and received 2 life sentences.
What did Rod get?
Rod got 2 counts of murder in the first degree. So basically like the death penalty.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. He got like the highest charge you could get, okay. Basically.
Okay.
Yeah. So then I called her Dana, I think, before when you asked me that question. Dana Cooper. Dana Cooper and Charity Kesey made plea deals in exchange for reduced charges and sentences. So Charity was given 10 years and Dana was given 17.
Why? Why did one get 10 and one get 17?
I have no idea.
Okay.
However they made the deal, the plea deals, I don't know.
Okay.
So Scott Anderson's sentence was later reduced to 40 years, including the time he already served.
What?
And so he will be released from prison when he is 51.
How does that make sense? How can you go from 2 life sentences to 40 years?
Apparently, he did, like, good. He's been, like, really good in prison, and so he's getting his sentence reduced.
Okay. Well, that's,
yep.
That is wild to me.
Oh, trust me. Wait till you hear the most wild one.
Oh, no.
So, Rod received the death penalty at only 17 years old.
Okay.
He held the record for being the youngest prisoner in America on death row. However, in November 2000, his death sentence was changed to life in prison after the Florida Supreme Court ruled defendants must be 17 or older when they commit a crime for execution. And he was 16 when he committed the murders.
Oh, wow. That's
can you believe that?
Exactly, like, sparing him. Like,
can you believe that?
That's insane.
Like, he was probably, what, like, a few months? I don't know when his birthday was, but, like, this happened in November.
To an extent, I do think giving a teenager the death penalty is I mean, obviously, it does not minimize, like, the crime by any means. But to an extent, I do think that is quite extreme. Only because, like, like rehabilitation, especially when they're that young, could be a possibility for them.
Okay, but the rule was defendants must be 17 or older. And he was like a few months, he was 16 and a few months away from being 17.
I hear what you're saying. I'm just saying to give a kid that young in general, even in the first place, the death penalty is just extreme, in my opinion.
I don't want to get too political, so. Okay.
But yeah,
I will not comment. Yeah. Yeah. So then Heather Wendorf, the daughter of the murder victims, she was never charged or convicted of any crimes.
Okay. Why?
Yeah, and she, that's what I don't get. And she's like living a full life. She's estranged from her family for obvious reasons, but she's just like living her full life. And from what I could tell was like Dana and Charity, I'm pretty sure, were like in the car with Heather when Rod and Scott were committing the murders. Like, I don't think Dana and Charity were involved.
Have that much to do with it.
But they got 10 and 17 years and Heather didn't get anything.
I wonder if it's just because her lawyer kind of did the whole like, no, she was just trying to run away. Like, she really didn't have anything to do with it. She was just trying to run away. Whereas the other two were like fully part of the cult at that point. But other than that, I can't think of any reason why.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if like maybe they like scavenged through the house with them or I have no idea, but like, I can't imagine, like, everyone would be in her house and she would just, like, be sitting in the car by herself. Right. Like, I feel like either she was also inside the house or, like, they were in the car with her. I'm not 100% sure.
Right.
So yeah, that is my research on the vampire cult in Rod Farrell.
Wow.
Yeah. I also watched an interview of him pretty recently, and he does, I will say, he does seem very different from the footage of him as a teenager right after committing these crimes versus right now as an adult.
Right.
But he still kind of gives me the heebie-jeebies.
Yeah. I mean,
and yeah, he is hoping, it hasn't happened yet, but he is hoping for the possibility of parole.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. You should watch it because he's still kind of heebie-jeebie.
Well, yeah, but yeah. I don't know how to have my like opinions on those type of things because I'm like, you're really young. So trying you as an adult is hard, but also like, there is still the possibility you could do it. I don't know.
I could see it. I more lean towards like, oh yeah, that's harsh and I don't know about that. If it were like an abusive situation, like Gypsy Rose Blanchard, yeah, or however you say her last name.
Yeah.
Like her, obviously, mm-hmm, that situation, like, I don't think she should have been charged. Like, I know she committed a crime, but she was like severely abused and a child. Yes.
Well, so I think in this particular case, and this is like my own personal opinion, is there's like no question that they should be convicted or even have like a life sentence or something like that. I think it is just extreme to give someone that young the death penalty.
I do not think that he should qualify for parole though, because like, this was a very brutal murder
right
on strangers.
Right.
And
like, with every intention of brutally murdering them.
Yeah, like,
not just like a, oh, we got,
with a crowbar.
Yeah, like, not just like a, oh, we got caught. Like, a very intentional, I'm going to go in and I'm going to kill these people.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
So, yeah. Oh, that's really gross.
Yeah, it was really, really, really bad. But obviously, they don't fall into being like a modern vampire, like that vampire culture.
Yeah, no, but that's like straight up just.
Yeah, this was killer. This was like a bad, like a huge deal in the 90s. Like it was all over the like media, and it was like a really big thing during that time. So I thought it was an applicable case to cover.
It was good.
Thank you.
All right. Well, is that the end of your notes?
Yeah.
Perfect. All right. Well, that concludes our two-part vampire series. Wahahaha. So hopefully you enjoyed it. Obviously, we are basically producing double the content for the month of October. So, and that's just our little special treat to you.
Yeah, getting so see
all the goods.
Stay tuned for the rest of the month and all of our exciting podcasts and videos. Yes. Don't forget to check our YouTube, which if you listen to this podcast premiered at 7, and our YouTube video also premieres on Fridays at 7 every week in October.
Mm-hmm. So after you listen to this, head over, check out the premiere right now. Do it right now. And then subscribe.
And stay tuned for all of our awesome videos.
Yes. All right. If you're interested in following along with any of the behind-the-scenes fun that we do for our podcasts or our YouTube or anything like that, be sure to follow our Instagram, and that's Hot Tea Cold Cases Pod. If you're in need of your daily dose of funny jokes, memes, videos, I don't know what else Allie posts on there, but make sure to,
it varies.
Whatever she feels. Make sure to follow the Twitter, and that is also Hot Tea Cold Cases Pod. Make sure to like and follow our Facebook page, Hot Tea Cold Cases Podcasts. And if you're interested in joining the Hot Tea community, join us for Tea Time on the Tea Time Facebook group, where you can interact with us and the rest of the Tea Time fam. If you have any interesting cold cases, haunted places, folklore, fairy tale, what else do we cover at this point? I don't even know.
Anything weird. Unnatural.
Send it over to us via email, and that's at hotteacoldcasespodcast@gmail.com. As we said earlier, our YouTube is premiering basically right now, so make sure to head over and go check that out. Like and subscribe if you enjoyed it. And you can find us on Spotify, Apple Music, Google Play, Stitcher, any other major podcast listening apps. And if we aren't yet on your favorite app, let us know and we will do our best to get on it. And then lastly, and most importantly, please make sure to rate, review, and subscribe on Apple Music, as it helps get our independent podcast heard. We need you. We want you. Please like us. All right. This has been another episode of Hot Tea, Cold Cases, and Frosty Hauntings, and Folklore, and Fairy Tales, and all the other weird things. I'm Alexa.
And I'm Allie.
And thanks for listening.
Our podcasts are based on information collected from existing sources and research. We are not professional paranormal investigators. We are simply two best friends learning about ghosts and true crime cases, wanting to share our experiences with you. The purpose of this podcast is purely for entertainment and should not be considered news or facts. The views and opinions presented in this podcast are ours alone and do not reflect those of our family members, employers, significant others, or pets.